Interesting, very interesting. We'll come back to this because I think trying to understand what that state could have looked like for it to then be rejected is obviously kind of a big facet of this entire area for me. The sort of next place I want to go to, Jimmy, is kind of around the idea of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Again, I'm aware that we can say that, you know, there wasn't a literal fruit that somebody literally ate, and it's much more of a metaphor. But I think part of it for me seems to suggest the idea that prior to the ability to make this decision, the knowledge of good and evil was something that these people didn't possess or were seeking or were trying to become closer to. Is that so? One of my kind of critiques, I guess, of this is it's very, very hard to judge something with a yardstick that doesn't quite make sense. It's almost like you need the sort of the sort of poles of good and evil to be able to make moral decisions and choices to move forward. So is it fair for a god to judge or condemn, you know, kind of humanity and original sin to begin to become about because of a decision made without the prior knowledge of good and evil? How would you begin to address that and look at that?
So I think we have to consider the text and what the text is trying to say. There is, and I guess I have two thoughts here. The first one is less essential. The second one is more essential. The less essential thought is, I have an impression that Genesis is recapitulating the story of human growth and development in regard to Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve are presented as being childlike. They are in this paradisical environment. They don't really have to work. And they are naked and they're not ashamed of it, just like little children have no problem throwing off their clothes and running around naked. They also lack wisdom, because that's one of the things the text tells us, is that when they are tempted by the fruit, they see it as desirable for gaining wisdom. And so they're like little children. They're carefree, they're naked, they don't have wisdom, they're like little kids. And then we see the process by which they become more like adults today. They put on clothes, they have to go to work, and they're wiser. And so I think that's part of what's going on in the Genesis text. A person might not agree, but that's the way it looks to me. Well, so how do we judge children accountable when they're young? It depends on the age of the child. Some children are so young that that they're really not accountable for their actions. I mean, you might give them a swat to get them out of danger, but because there's no reasoning with them at that age, you have to kind of use force to just get them out of danger. But when children get older, they start to become capable of moral reasoning, and that's when we start to hold them accountable. So one of the obvious convictions of the author of Genesis is that God is good and just. And so I think we have to read this childhood. I mean, in fact, he's subverting pagan concepts of gods that are not good and just in the text. If you read carefully and you're familiar with the ancient Near Eastern background, it's very obvious that's what he's doing. So given his conviction that God is good and just, we have to read God's disciplining of Adam and Eve in that light and say, even if they weren't as wise as they would come to be, they had enough wisdom that they were responsible for making this decision. And thus God was just in order to discipline them after they failed to make the correct decision, after they abused their freedom. So that's sort of my first thought. My second thought concerns another feature of the text, which is the phrase knowledge of good and evil. There's been a lot of question about what does that mean exactly. And on its face, you might think, oh, they don't know the concepts of good and evil. And if that's what it meant, well, then it wouldn't make any sense for God to hold them accountable, because they don't understand the concept of good and they don't understand the concept of evil, and therefore they couldn't be held accountable for their action in pursuing this. There's also evidence in the text that they do understand that some things are good because they consider the fruit and we're told that it's attractive, it looks good. That's a good that they're responding to, that it's going to be good for food, so they're recognizing that as a good, and that it's good for gaining wisdom. So they understand wisdom is a desirable thing. So they clearly are not completely ignorant of the concepts of good and evil. They're not just amoral, chaotic creatures. They are being guided by reason in this. So I think that the natural way to understand the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil is as a particular literary device that we don't often think about, but we use it in English. It's called a merism. And what a merism does is it expresses a whole by naming its two parts. So if I said to someone, let's say I'm getting married and I tell my wife, I love you body and soul. Okay, body and soul are the two halves of me or my wife, whoever I'm talking about. Either I love you with all my body and soul, or I love you, both your body and your soul. But I'm expressing the totality of a human person by naming its two halves. We do the same thing, like if I say, oh man, I've been working day and night. Day and night are the two halves of a day, and I mean I've been working all the time. Or if I say, like Genesis does, God created the heavens and the earth. Okay, the heavens and the earth are the two parts of creation, so it means God created everything. And those are all illustrations of merisms. And the best exegetical proposal I've seen, which actually was in a Jewish commentary, is that good and evil in this case is a merism. And so by saying Adam and Eve were after the knowledge of good and evil, it means they were after the knowledge of everything, because everything's either good or evil, you know, from this point of view. And so they're after comprehensive knowledge. They're after comprehensive wisdom. And so that's how I understand that. It doesn't mean that they literally had no understanding of good and evil. They obviously understood things like wisdom is good. But they were after comprehensive knowledge. They wanted to take their knowledge to a fundamentally new level by consuming the fruit. And without the fruit, they still had knowledge, and they had enough knowledge to be justly accountable for their action, given the author of Genesis's conviction that God is good and just. But they wanted even more.